The Dead Side of the Mic by Simon Brett, dramatised by Jeremy Frunt.
Well done, Charles.
The audience loved it.
I should hope so too. Yeah. When the boys handed me a script with a bipolar butcher, I'm like, who the hell am I going to cast? Then I hear you reading The Ancient Mariner on Poetry Please, and it's like, da-da, comedy epiphany.
In 1 week, I'd recorded an afternoon play, a Poetry Please, and now a sitcom pilot set in an abattoir.
If we get a series, you up for it?
Too right.
I'd also found a blood-soaked studio manager dead in an editing suite. So, just an average week on the BBC Drama Rep.
We'll be in the George if you fancy a drink.
Well, I always fancy a drink. I don't want to
drink my whiskey like you. The George was heaving, but there was no sign of Steph Kennett. Steph, flatmate of the dead SM, had enigmatically arranged to meet me after the show, but refused to elaborate on the phone.
Well done, Charles. Bloody good show. Very funny.
What are you doing here?
The best thing about being on the Rep was not having to pester my worse-than-bleeding useless agent.
Oh, nice greeting.
It's lovely to see him, or is it just unexpected?
A diligent agent always pops in on his clients.
Give me his number, I'll call him.
If I hadn't developed the hide of a rhino, I might take offence at your little snipes.
I'm very touched that you gave up your evening for me.
You're not just for you. I also managed to drag Sophie Waterman over from TV Centre. Do you know her?
Should I?
I'll introduce you, providing you don't go into your ageing Lothario routine.
You're really great for my self-esteem.
Chatting up younger women's undignified in a man on the cusp of grandparenthood.
Thanks for the reminder.
What are friends for? Oh, there she is, coming out of the ladies.
The kid in jeans and sneakers.
The new head of BBC commissioning / entertainment / short format / narrative / broken comedy / vision.
What's vision?
The BBC for telly. Keep up, Charles. Mm. She was splashed all over broadcast last week. The saviour of UK terrestrials.
I don't buy the trades. They're full of other people's success.
Yeah, listen to Mr. Sourpuss.
Meow.
Sophie's heading up a new prime-time genre buster, and she's looking for fresh talent.
I hope you'll put me up for her genre buster.
Absolutely goes without saying. The one playing the ditzy checkout girl.
Zoe.
Has she done much?
You know, Footlights, Edinburgh.
Agent?
Thanks, but I've got one.
Is she represented? Out of curiosity.
You're just here to get her on your list before she's snapped up by telly.
When did you become so cynical?
After 20 years on your books. Look, she's talking to your mate, Sophie.
What? Oh, catch you later, Charles. Well done again.
Self-serving old bugger.
Something I said?
Sorry, Steph. I've just seen how ruthlessly ambitious my agent can be when he's not working for me.
Oh, no, there's Jamie.
Jamie?
Annie's ex-husband.
Which one?
Media Glasses, limited edition all-stars.
Gotcha. Who's that girl?
Probably his latest victim. Can we get out of here?
We ended up at a Soho Trat sandwiched between a gay club and an S&M boutique. Into the second bottle of Barolo, Steph loosened up and told me why she'd asked to meet.
After you left last night, I finished boxing up Annie's stuff for her parents to collect, and I found this.
Mm. She handed me a neatly folded letter, written in an assertive hand and signed Tom McLeish, the old friend who'd got me onto the Radio Rep.
Much as it pains me to write this, I realise you no longer want me, and I have to accept that you are gone from my life.
Typical.
What?
It pains him. He has to accept. She has gone from his life. It's all about him.
You've really got it in for him.
Finish the letter.
I feel sick at the thought of another man receiving those smiles, those looks, those kisses.
Pass the bucket.
In time, the pain will heal, but right now it's best I keep away from you for fear of what I might do.
Well?
He's not actually threatening to do anything. He says he's afraid of what he might do.
Come on, Charles. I know your old buddies.
Believe me, Steph, I know Tom's faults, but murder?
All I know is he was having an affair with Annie. She dumped him, then we found her dead. And you don't believe she committed suicide any more than I do.
Steph and I found Annie with both wrists slashed. But the post-mortem showed her system also contained more drugs than a medical student's hall of residence on graduation day. Annie was either very indecisive or very determined to die. Or somebody else wanted her dead.
Well, if you're so convinced Tom's a murderer, why haven't you shown the letter to the police?
Oh, as far as they're concerned, Annie killed herself, full stop. I need to present them with watertight evidence, which is why I hoped you might have a chat with Tom.
Whoa, hang on a minute. That's entrapment.
Investigative journalism.
You say potato, I say potato. You know, Tom got me this job on the Rep.
which excuses murder.
You have absolutely no proof or evidence that Tom murdered anybody.
Calm down. The waiter's looking.
The worst you can accuse him of is writing purple prose, which is hardly a hanging offence.
Tom is one of those men who talks to women like intellectual equals while wondering what they look like naked.
I had heard of such men.
He's more likely to open up to you than me.
I'm not comfortable with this.
OK, forget the Tom thing. Look, this may be nothing, but Annie had just got back from the States, right?
Too late. Lee Harvey Oswald's already dead.
OK, I'm a paranoid conspiracy theorist, but what do you make of this?
A postcard of the New York skyline at night.
Turn it over.
No message, just a scrawled address, phone number, and the name...
Danny Klinger. Who's Danny Klinger?
I've no idea, but I found it slipped inside Annie's rough guide. Then I was going through the cuttings at work, and I found this.
Car park body. The body of a man found in a central London underground car park has been identified as American hip-hop producer Danny Klinger.
Coincidence?
Depends if both wrists were slashed and the body was swilling with drugs and vodka.
It was a hosepipe through the window job. But you've got to admit it's weird.
Let me write down what's on the postcard.
Sure. I've already rung the number. It's a New York code, but disconnected.
You're really into this.
My friend's dead, Charles.
Sorry.
OK, there's a bit of me that can't resist a good story.
Well, I think you need to decide what your story is. A crime of passion murder by Tom McLeish or a double suicide music business mystery.
I didn't have any bookings the next day, so I took the opportunity to catch up on some recreational drinking, which, in the light of events, might not have been the best idea.
I'm breathing.
Frances, my semi-estranged wife, was having a girls' night out at a Nepalese restaurant in Kentish Town.
I'm breathing.
So our daughter, Juliet, had invited her prenatal class to our place, and I'd reluctantly agreed to stand in as her birthing partner.
Dad.
Sorry.
Pull the lift up and feel your pelvic floor rising. Pull it up, up,
ooh.
Up.
Ooh.
Feel it rising, Charles?
Something's rising.
Good.
I can't tell if it's the lift or the floor. Oh, God.
What's wrong?
Either the lift's stuck or I've got dry rot in my pelvic floorboards.
Shut up, Dad.
Sorry.
OK, everyone, slowly lower the lift. Breathe out and relax. Now, I'm going to play the contraction CD and we'll practice our breathing while the men offer support.
We'll be good at this one.
It's not a competition.
Trust me, it's all in the groaning. In 1975, I played Mary in an all-male York Mysteries. I had to give birth live on stage every night and it's all about diaphragm work. Here we go.
Women, focus on breathing. Partners, time the contraction.
One, two, three. Come on, Juliet, groan.
Just shut up and count.
What
are you doing?
I'm feeling your pain.
Well, stop it.
I can't. It was a six-week improv rehearsal. It was a very intense process.
For God's sake, Dad.
A performance like that leaves a psychic imprint on the memory. Sorry, all. Sorry. Oh, what do you want, Morris?
I'm in the Ivy with Sophie Waterman and my new client, Zoe. You all right?
I really can't talk now. I'm in the middle of a contraction.
All contracts are supposed to go through me.
Not contract, contraction.
Please take it outside, Charles.
Yes, Dad.
Just breathe.
What?
Not you.
I thought you'd like to know we're celebrating Zoe's new vehicle.
Well, you never took me to the Ivy when I bought a car.
Not that kind of vehicle. Zoe's got her own BBC Three sitcom, and she wants you to play her incontinent granddad.
No way. Sod that for a game of cards.
Oh, I thought you'd be pleased.
What am I, Arnold Ridley? Do I look like a granddad? Once you start playing doddery old geezers, there's no going back. Give me some vestige of self-respect, Morris. Oh, no.
But what?
I think my waters are broken.
Dad!
I'm sorry, Charles. I'm going to have to ask you to leave.
What?
I can't believe
believe you did that.
I'm sorry.
No, sorry's not good enough.
No.
Sorry's what you always say. It's too easy.
Calm down, Juliet. Think of the baby.
Oh, you are so bloody infuriating.
Well, nothing. It's nothing.
Nothing? He humiliated me in front of the entire class.
No.
I go out for a couple of hours, peace and quiet, and come back to World War III.
Oh, how was the meal? I've never eaten Nepalese. There was lots of yak milk, was there?
He was drunk in a prenatal class.
I was not.
Charles.
I wasn't drunk.
Oh, the look of wounded innocence.
Well,
you've been drunk's not exactly out of character.
He's still pissed now.
Well, I am now. I got kicked out of the class. I had to do something with my evening.
Sorry, you were expelled from a prenatal class.
He has to be the centre of attention.
No.
I'll never be able to face them again.
She's overreacting.
If you say it's my hormones talking, I will commit patricide.
Why don't you go and have a lie down, darling?
I'm fine.
Not you!
Oh, you ruin everything!
Okay, I got a bit carried away with my empathy.
You never showed me much empathy. When I had Juliet, you weren't even there.
I was doing Brecht at the Liverpool Everyman to put bread on the family table.
And screwing Mother Courage into the bargain.
Oh, yeah.
Hoist by my own petard, I know when I'm beaten and when to bow out gracefully, so I retreated to the sanctuary of the Café Cassia.
You have good appetite, Charles.
Yeah, well, it's been a long day.
There is old saying. You can see how a man makes love by the way he eats.
In my case, alone or starved to death. Ah, sorry. Excuse me. Sorry. Hello, Steph.
Sorry to call after hours. Am I interrupting anything?
Just a bowl of Krupnik.
You like Polish food?
I admire any cuisine with a reckless disregard for cholesterol.
I did an attachment to Gdansk a while ago. You'll have to try my kachka z jabłkami sometime.
Well, I'd like that, I think.
Any chance we could meet up?
Sure. When?
I'm home now, if you don't mind coming here.
A sweltering subterranean hour later, I arrived at Steph's, red as a lobster and soaked in sweat.
What happened to you? Did you fall in a canal?
It's Boris's new initiative to fight London's obesity by turning tube trains into Turkish baths.
You better have a glass of water.
Well, I don't drink anything fish make love in, but I've brought some Poulian Primitivo.
Oh, I'll get a corkscrew.
It's an audacious little number, full of new world aspiration, without the strident in-your-faceness of an Aussie backpacker doing Europe.
As long as it goes well with Twiglets.
What doesn't?
Annie's death had hit Steph hard, so it was good to see her smile. It was also good just to see her, and as we were becoming partners in detection, I was hoping to see a lot more of her. So, what's all this about?
The mysterious Danny Klinger.
Oh, what have you found out?
He was a New Yorker in the music business, a bit of a ducker and diver, not a corporate man, strictly small time. He did a bit of producing, a bit of DJing, and he ran a little indie label, Minor League stuff. He seems to have had some dodgy connections, though.
Well, that's par for the course in the music business. I was in a band once, called Proudhon's Children, in the early 70s. Sort of an anarcho-syndicalist prog rock. We were pretty big on the Workers' Revolutionary Party scene.
Anyway, Google Danny Klinger and there are loads of references to him being investigated for business fraud.
Oh.
So I did a bit more sniffing around and discovered that he arrived in the UK shortly after Annie.
Ah. So it's possible they could have met up in New York.
And I'm wondering if they might have had a fling. Annie was always drawn to iffy men.
Anything to link the two deaths?
His body was full of booze and pills, the same pills they found in Annie.
If they hooked up in New York, then he dumped her. Would that be enough for her to kill herself?
Annie wouldn't commit suicide over a man.
Say she fell madly in love with Klinger. He tells her he's married. She dumps him, comes home. Danny has a change of heart, follows her, discovers she's dead, blames himself.
Kills himself out of remorse.
Guilt and remorse played such a big part in my own love life, I couldn't help applying it to everyone else's.
That day she got back, we were all in the club. Annie was on a manic high and said she'd been sniffing around in New York.
You're right, she did.
But we don't know what it was she was on to. I mean,
I started wondering if there was a man in Steph's life.
Out of studio management.
I hadn't spotted signs of masculinity around the flat.
Charles?
Sorry, what?
If Annie discovered Klinger was into something dodgy, he might have followed her to England to shut her up.
Drug her, slash her wrists, then kill himself out of...
What is it with you and remorse?
A broken marriage I wanted to mend, failure as a father, and after the prenatal class, it looked like I was going to make a hash out of being a grandfather too.
Or they both shared a secret that a third person wanted kept quiet.
A third person who killed them both and made it look like suicide.
At least it takes remorse out of the equation.
But who's the third person?
Edwin Palmer. He's alive.
Indeed, you are listening to Edwin Palmer, and I am very definitely live. Pulsating, nay, throbbingly so.
Edwin Palmer. No artificial additives, except no substitutes.
Today we're attempting to get to the very
burning.
I call it ebony and ivory. It's a pan-fried collation of black and white puddings on a duvet of toast.
And the blood sack?
Flame-grilled cherry tomato for contrast we eat with our eyes.
My eyes see an illustration from The Lancet.
There's a bit going if you're happy.
Thanks, but I never eat plasma before 8 in the morning. What are you listening to?
Radio 2.
You're strictly a Charlotte Green man. What will she say when she discovers you've been two-timing
her? As I'm on the BBC payroll, I thought I'd better research the broader output. And now I have. Aha! The peace and repose of the family kitchen.
Oh, and they're off. How long are Cheech and Chong going to be up in the roof?
Toby's promised to be finished before the baby's born.
Toby?
The quieter one with hazel eyes.
Ugh, and ludicrous shoulders.
What's ludicrous about
them? No one needs arms that big. Never trust a man whose neck's wider than his head.
It's not gym fitness, they're working muscles.
Working muscles?
Like you're a radio actor, so you've got a big mouth.
Mm, touchy.
He's not just a builder, he's a craftsman cabinet maker.
Salt of the earth, physical, good with his hands.
Degree in sculpture from St. Martin's, M.A. in furniture design, Ph.D. on the Bauhaus.
You have been getting to know each other.
The sooner they finish, the sooner I can move into the loft and you can come off the sofa and there'll be plenty of room for Juliet and the baby.
And is she speaking to me or do I need to bring in the UN?
At the moment, you're taking the blame for the collective failings of your gender.
As if my own failings weren't enough.
She's going through a major life change, about to become a single mother, and Miles has barely been in touch.
I'm not taking the rap because she got herself up the duff by that Tory twit.
Did I tell you Mum's coming over in a couple of weeks and lend a hand?
Oh, good.
Don't say it like you're sucking a lemon.
I know. I'm looking forward to being loathed by two women at once.
Carry on like this, it'll be three.
I admit I was a flawed husband and a feckless father, but is there any chance Angela might turn the other cheek before hell freezes over?
Yeah, around the same time you tell Miles it's time to forgive and forget.
I had a 10 o'clock start, so I grabbed my script, the Times, reading glasses, Oyster card, and hightailed it into town.
Hold the lift, please.
Thanks.
Pleasure.
Oh.
Door was closing.
Which floor?
What? Which?
Floor.
Oh, I,
Going up.
Oh.
Over the years, I'd worked with some big names, so I was pretty immune to showbiz gloss. But this was different.
I assume you're going up.
Up?
Or are you here for the round trip?
No, I mean, yes. I mean, up, yes, thank you.
Where
please.
To?
Where to what?
Which floor?
Oh.
It was the voice I'd gone to bed with.
Sixth, please.
The voice I'd woken up to.
Sixth floor, same as me.
The voice that launched 1,000 shipping forecasts. And now all I could do was smile and gibber inanely.
But you're a brunette.
No, I'm not.
Oh, in my dreams. I mean, not dreams. Imagination, like... Oh, I'm sorry. I'm sorry, you must get this all the time.
Tyne, Dogger, Fisher, German Bite.
Oh, God.
Are you all right?
You've no idea what this means to me.
Probably best you keep it to yourself.
Yes.
Sixth floor.
Well, nice to meet you.
Charles.
Nice to meet you, Charles.
Oh, God. I can die a happy man.
Yeah. After a read-through, I spent the morning in the green room, waiting to be called, doing the Times crossword and drinking too much stewed black coffee.
OK, we're breaking for lunch now. Everyone back at 2 o'clock, please.
Thanks, Tom.
Making my way through the labyrinthine corridors, I saw Annie's ex, Jamie, going into the spot effects store. So I seized the moment.
Sorry, I'm looking for Studio 60A.
Oh, you should have turned right at the lift.
Well, I'm new on the rep and I'm still trying to get my bearings.
Oh.
Oh, so this is where they keep all the... I'm Charles Paris.
Paris, you're the one who found Annie Gower.
Unfortunately, yeah. Did you know her?
You could say that. I married her once.
Sorry. I didn't realise. Steph Kennett said Annie'd been married, but I didn't...
Probably couldn't bring herself to mention my name. She's not my number one fan.
Oh.
Jamie Nichols.
Right. Wow. They really work, don't they?
Could you put them down?
Sorry, sure.
Cheers.
Annie and Steph were pretty good friends, weren't they?
Yeah, till I came along.
Oh.
Steph got jealous.
Jealous? Do you mean they were...
Could you not do that, please?
Sorry.
They weren't lovers, if that's what you mean. Well, not that I knew.
Do you mind if I ask where you and Annie met?
Yeah, I had an attachment to Edwin Palmer Live.
Attachment? What, like producing?
Well, they eventually let me loose on the show and they were confident I wouldn't break anything or upset the Golden Boy.
You're not a fan?
No, it's all right. Just another control freak in an industry full of control freaks.
Which was pretty much how Steph described Jamie to me. That and the fact that he couldn't keep his flies done up.
That was the comedy window.
Sorry.
Yeah, not my problem anymore. I'm out of here.
You're leaving?
Oh, I've had an offer from an indie.
Look, I know it's none of my business, but would you have thought Annie was the suicidal type?
I'll tell you what I think. Shit happens. And Annie was one of those people it happens to.
In 30 years of service at this college, I have seen many a young man fall ill through, well, shall we say, a surfeit of pleasure. Forgive my presumption, sir, but if I might offer some advice, exercise moderation in all things.
Yeah, good stuff, Charles. We'll pick up scene three tomorrow morning, right?
By the time Tom entered the George, I was already at the bar and halfway through my first scotch of the evening.
Oh. How do you do it?
Diligence, determination and years of practice. When you've a minute, Shane, a pint of best, another Bell's, and take it out of that.
No problems, mate.
Everything sound OK in the box?
No, I could do without the author chewing his calcium-deficient nails and tutting every time I give a note.
He did look a bit poorly.
Yeah, he's a writer. They're all anemic from spending all day alone without exposure to daylight.
You see, I need to be around people. That's why I never wrote the great English novel.
Oh, I see, that's why.
Yeah. Here you go, gents.
Cheers.
Cheers.
Remember that miserable bugger who wrote the show about the Grunwick strike? Alopecia, halitosis and a stranger to soup.
It was 1975. Of course I don't remember.
Actually, it was 77.
I rest my case. I can't remember what I had for breakfast these days.
You want to get a brain trainer.
Tom produced a tiny digital IQ test from his pocket.
Wards off premature dementia while you commute.
You want to get one of these, right? I pulled out a dog-eared paperback Hound of the Baskervilles. It's called a book. Mm. Small, portable, no power source required, just an intellect connection. I reckon it's the future.
So, what's the first sentence?
Something about...
Mr. Sherlock Holmes, who was usually very late in the morning, save upon those not infrequent occasions when he was up all night, was seated at the breakfast table. Go on, check it.
That really is quite annoying, you smug bastard.
We're not getting any younger, Charlie. Got to look after the old noggin.
OK, what did you have for dinner last night?
Spaghetti carbonara and a very decent Montepulciano.
You could have said anything.
Ring Verity, she'll back me up.
I'm not phoning a woman I've never met to ask what she fed you last night.
How do you know I didn't feed her?
Your cooking is one thing I do remember.
Said the man who invented the spaghetti hoop omelette.
Fusion cuisine. I was years ahead of my time.
Go on then. Ask me another. Harder one.
Right. What did you do last Tuesday?
Tuesday? Well, the day after Annie...
Sorry, bad choice.
No. Let's stick with it. Let me see.
I still thought Steph was wrong about Tom, but at least I could tell her I'd quizzed him and ruled him out as a suspect.
I spent the morning ringing around agents after an actor dropped out of a play at the last minute.
Really? Who?
Mind your own business. I had a rather indifferent Thai green curry for lunch, which repeated on me throughout the interminable bloody meeting, went home, read to the kids... ate with Verity and was tucked up in bed with a script by 11. Another Bells.
Can I waste the brain cells? Several rounds later, Tom staggered back to Belsize Park. I sneaked back to his office to dial an outside line which would be harder to trace.
Hello?
Mrs. McLeish?
Who wants to know?
Neville Bannerman, Neighbourhood Watch. Did you get our little leaflet through the door? Not to worry. And sorry to cold call, but we're alerting local residents to the wave of car crime in the area. I don't know if you're aware of this.
I don't think they'd be interested in our old Citroën.
You'd be surprised. The thing is, they tend to target an area and swoop in one evening. We suffered one of these swoops last Tuesday night, and I was wondering if you'd noticed anything.
I was away at my parents'. You'd have to ask my husband, and he's not here at the moment.
Righto. I'll call back when he's in.
It wasn't proof that Tom was a murderer, just that his memory wasn't as good as he'd made out. Or that he'd lied to me.
Hello?
Steph, it's Charles. I've been talking...
Oh, Charles, I'm at Heathrow in a bit of a rush.
Heathrow?
We're doing a live link-up from Jerusalem, and LL security's a complete nightmare, so I'll have to be quick.
Well, I just thought you should know. I've spoken to Jamie and Tom.
What did Jamie have to say for himself?
Not much.
Sounds like him. No, that's hand baggage! Sorry, Charles, what about Tom?
He said he was at home with his wife the night Klinger died, but he wasn't.
No, he was at the flat.
What? flat.
My flat? He stayed all night. What do you mean overweight? There's no way that bag is overweight. Sorry, Charles, it's crazy here.
But, I mean...
We'll have to do this when I get back. Bye.
Drunk and disappointed, I stopped off at the Drum and Monkey for a late nightcap before reeling home.
And the only sound that's left after the ambulance is gone is Cinderella sweeping up the desolation.
I was disappointed with Tom. Disappointed that he was sleeping with Steph, jealous that I wasn't, and guilty at feeling jealous.
Hello, Julia. I'm bound to have done something wrong, and in which case I'm sorry and I'll never do it again.
Dad!
What? What's wrong?
It's Mum.
What is it, Juliet?
She's so upset, Dad.
Upset? Oh, thank God. I mean, why? What's happened?
It's Granny. She's dead.
There's always a deafening silence in a house of mourning, like the oppressive quiet when there's a new baby and people tiptoe around, terrified to wake it.
Why now, Charles?
I don't know, darling.
She'll never see the baby.
Oh, it's not fair.
Well, life isn't.
I feel so useless.
Why don't you go and make us all a cup of tea? Frances lay in a fetal position on a sofa. A damp ball of tissue scrunched in her fist.
I'm all alone now.
No, you're not.
I am. I know it sounds silly from a grown woman, but I feel like an orphan.
Oh, come here. When everything else was falling apart, words glued me and Frances together. Even cruel or harsh, it still came down to words.
I know you and Mummy didn't get on.
Now words seemed inadequate.
But she liked you, you know.
My words, anyway.
She always had a soft spot for you.
So I just held her and let her talk.
She was so far away.
After her husband died, Angela met Harry, a retired university professor, and they moved back to his native New York.
I mean, I know Harry was with her. I just wish...
Oh, no. I helped her up to bed and waited with her till she fell asleep. Back downstairs, Juliet sprawled in an armchair like a beached whale.
Is she all right?
For now. I suppose I should make some calls.
The funeral's on Thursday.
Yeah. Will you be able to go?
I can't fly to New York. Not this far gone.
Oh, of course.
You'll go, won't you?
Me?
Mum can't go on her own.
Well, what if you go into labour early?
I don't think it'd be much use if I did. Seriously, Mum needs you more than I do.
I was glad to be needed, especially by Frances, and I liked the novelty of the feeling. Then a despicable little voice had to come along and spoil things. Yippee, it said.
You're going to New York.
Sometimes, I really don't like being me.
In The Dead Side of the Mic by Simon Brett, Charles Paris was played by Bill Nighy and Francis by Suzanne Burden. Juliet was played by Tilly Gaunt, Morris by John Glover, and Tom McLeish by Nicky Henson. Steph Kennett was Emily Raymond, Edwin Palmer, Chris Pavlo, and Jamie, Alex Lanepecken. Nick was played by Dan Starkey, Kazia by Jill Cardo, and Verity by Donla Hughes. Charlotte Green was played by Charlotte Green. The Dead Side of the Mic was dramatised by Jeremy Front and directed by Sally Evans.